Traces.
This is very heavy, actually. Listen to this. Yadi, if nasamudaranti, they do not uproot yataya, persons in the renounced order of life. If even a person who is exalted and detached and has renounced everything, practically speaking, if they do not uproot these renunciants, riddhi in their hearts, kam, but not only kam, material desires, but the next word, jataha, means traces. Even a small amount, even if they don't uproot the smallest amounts of material desires in their hearts,
Duradigama.
Impossible to be realized. What do you think about that? That unless the last traces, and obviously if it's true for the renunciants, how much more it is true for those who are not very renounced, who have so many material attachments, impossible. Duradigamaha, impossible to be realized. Asatam, for the impure. Let's see how small, in the context of this verse, the gateway is to the spiritual world. Riddhi in the heart. Gataha, having entered. Asmrita, forgotten. Kanta, on one's neck. Mani, a jewel. The verse will describe this. What is this? Forgotten? A jewel around his neck? The verse explains that for a person who has even traces of impurity, what's going to happen to them? Asmitaha. Asmitaha. You will be forgotten. Meaning the Supreme Lord, because the personified Vedas, the personified Upanishad.
They are speaking, not the Lord. You will be forgotten,
even if one has a
traces of impurities in the heart, and then an example is given. Just like if one wears a jewel around his neck or her neck, a necklace, what tends to happen when you have something around your neck?
When you're putting it on and you look in the mirror, you think, oh, so nice, so wonderful. And then 5 minutes later, one goes on with one's life, and immediately, practically speaking, what happens?
One forgets. So the result, these Upasanic verses are saying, the result of even having you, who is like the true jewel, the result of having you, even for a person, just like the person who has a necklace around his neck, a fine jewel necklace, gold engraved, in a valuable setting, forgets it. So if one has traces of material desires within one's heart, one will forget Krishna. The most valuable jewel, practically speaking, the only jewel in this world. Why is it the only jewel? What does it mean when we're talking about jewels? What is the meaning? Yes, something very valuable. What else is actually valuable in this world? Mahaprabhu says, Nadanam Najanam Nasundarim Kavitam Vajagadisha Kamani Mamajan, even liberation. Not valuable. I don't want these things. Everyone wants artha, or things of value. What time? What time do you have to go? But what time? Now it's 15 minutes after approximately. After what time do you have to leave?
8:30.
So not so soon. So I'll keep track of the time for you, so you don't have to worry. Okay. Now what time do you have to leave?
8:50.
Okay. So you have more time. So don't worry. Okay. I'll take it as my responsibility. And little girl, what time do you have to leave? You don't have to leave. Oh. So the valuable jewel, that which is of value, which means our relationship with Krishna, that which is eternal. That which is eternal. And not only eternal, but especially sparkling and wonderful. Because there is the eternal, but then there is a dull eternal, which means emerging, sayujamukti. That is not actually a jewel. Rather, the devotees consider that loss of misery, they consider it narak, hellish. Because there is no chance in that to serve Krishna, to love Krishna. Now, here's the next question, which is explained in the translation too. Why is it that if one has even traces of material contaminations and desires, why is it that the jewel of spiritual, of deep, brilliant, sparkling spiritual realization, why is it that we don't remember it? Why do we forget it? Even if one is extremely renounced.
Maya is very strong.
That's true. But there's something that he's saying that's even deeper.
Traces.
Traces, yes. But
Because one would think that a trace of material desires in the heart is like a spark, and it will ignite again our material existence. If you have a field of fire around straw, and then you put out that fire, but there is a spark left and there is straw left, one, are you safe? What do you think? Why? Because there's a chance, a very easy chance, of that spark turning again into a blazing fire. It's the nature of sparks, it's the nature of fire, and it's the nature of volatile fuel. But that isn't the reason. Despite it being a good reason, it isn't the reason that's described in this verse. And the reason is you do not allow them to understand you. That Krishna withholds himself, deep personal realization from himself, of himself, from a person whose heart is in complete darpanam, just like a mirror. When we look in the mirror, we expect to see what?
Reflection.
When you look in a mirror, you don't expect to see a reflection. I'm talking on a practical level. What do you expect to see when you look in the mirror? Huh? Your face. Yes, naturally. Otherwise, how would you pronounce Tilak? Did you ever notice that Tilak mirrors are supposed to be very small? Why do you think they're supposed to be very small? Yes.
Because the Tilak space is very small.
Yes, and we're not supposed to get caught in the whole rest of our beautiful face looking into our eyes and seeing if this is right and that is right. And the wrinkle, or move out that wrinkle a bit. Just the business of the moment is supposed to be thought of. So therefore, the Vaishnavas use small tilak mirrors. Did you know that? Because if we get caught up in looking at our own face and become enamored by that, or even disgusted by that, depending upon the situation and the age, then we forget all about our business, which happens to be putting on tilak, which signifies that the body is a temple, and within this temple lives the most wonderful person who we have a very deep relationship with. So Krishna, when we look in a mirror, we expect to see ourselves, but when we look in a dusty mirror, we will see only dust. So even if there are traces of dust on the mirror of our consciousness, the Chaitanya, or the consciousness, then Krishna will not allow, we may even see ourselves, but he will not allow us to see him. Because seeing him, there is actually one cause and one cause only, and it is not even purity. Of course, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Ramananda Roy says, and Rupa Goswami puts this into Padyavali, taptra loyam api mulam ikalam, deep desire, as we naturally, greedily desire material things at this point, not you, when I meant me, I mean me mostly. But if we naturally develop, we have material desires and we get material things. But yet, it is really not our greediness for even spiritual realization that will bring us to the complete shelter of Krishna's lotus feet and have Krishna reveal himself to us. It is his mercy, his kindness,
in reciprocation with our sincere desire to be with Him. And therefore, the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are one of developing very deep longing to be with Krishna, to serve, not just to be with Him and stand there and look at Him. Here I am. That's Shantaras. And Shantaras is not accepted as an actual rasa by the great acharyas. Does anyone know why? I recently read a comment of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur that explained very clearly why Shantaras is not accepted as a rasa. Does anyone know? That's really, really close. Yes, that's actually, we could, not exactly in the language I was thinking, but that's actually it. Rasa is something special. It's a mixture of different emotions that combine together make ecstasy. Does anyone who has studied the Bhakti of some distant nectar devotion, what are the ingredients of rasa? The first thing, most important thing, is called sthayibhav, which means your constitutional position of love is established. Because if your relationship stayed, it's firmly fixed. And then everything else reacts with that. Because if you don't have the relationship with Krishna established, it is like, if, just like we have our car, if someone bangs into our car with another car, we get very angry. But if someone, because we've invested our self, our feeling of self in the car, and therefore we have a relationship with that car. But if someone bangs into another person's car, we don't care at all. In fact, sometimes we say, oh, I'm so sorry to hear that, but inside we're thinking, you deserve that. And even worse. So everything is based, rasa, or very deep spiritual ecstatic emotion, is based on having a very deep ecstatic relationship of love, pratikul, of love with Krishna. And then we add the stimulations to that, the vibhav, the stimulations of udipan, something that's a stimulant. Udipan means a stimulant. So it stimulates the relationship between the ashraya and the vishaya, the person who's holding the love and the object of the love, Krishna. The avacharyas and sattvikavavas and the anubhavas that arise from that, like waves in the ocean. Like great waves of ocean. And this ocean is bhakti rasa amrita of rasa. The ocean of bhakti rasa is always moving and churning. There is variety of ecstatic feelings that a devotee is experiencing in relationship to Krishna, and Krishna is Rasa Raj. He's the expert at churning that ocean of ecstasy, of relationship, of rasa, which produces so many different forms of ecstasy. So Shantaras is not actually considered a rasa because it's always shanti. Shanti, 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 shanti. It's always just peaceful, and there is no stimulation of anything. It is samadhi, fixedness only, and observing. So no rasa actually gets developed within that. And therefore it is considered very low, and not even on the level of rasa. In Vrindavan, even the entities who one would think would have shantaras, such as the grass, etc., they all have mixtures of higher rasas in there. They feel ecstatic when Krishna, the grass, feels ecstatic when Krishna touches the grass with. What does he touch the grass with? If he's doing a hit stand, maybe he's touching it with his lotus head. But generally, he's walking. Because this is the speciality of Krishna. walks on the land of Vrindavan barefoot. Did you know that? And then Vaikuntha wears slippers and shoes. Prabhupada describes this in relationship to Dhruva Maharaj. When Dhruva Maharaj is asked by his spiritual master Narada Muni, he told him, you go to Mahavan. Raise your hand if you've seen Dhruva Tila in Madhavan in Vrindavan. No one. Raise your hand if you've seen dust of Vrindavan anywhere. Raise your hand if you've seen the Jamuna River. Now we have to get our percentages a little higher here over the next few years. Govardhan Hill. Raise your hand if you'd like to see the Jamuna River. Raise your hand if you'd like to place yourself in the dust of Vrindavan around Govardhan Hill. Yes. So Krishna is one. So this verse is saying that we forget Krishna because Krishna doesn't reveal himself to us. If we have even traces of material desires, if we're distracted from him, we forget about him. And he allows us to forget about him. He allows us, and he doesn't reveal himself to us. So therefore the process of Krishna consciousness is the process of developing a very, very deep desire to serve Krishna, to love Krishna. And that is the process that we're following. The sadhanas, they're all meant for that. And therefore the heart is to be cleansed. And the practices that we perform of sadhana bhakti are meant for that. To cleanse the heart, cito dorpanam marjanam, and also and when that happens, bhavamahadavaminavapanam. Material miseries vanish just like the rain. Just like the rain makes the very hard pouring down of rain makes the forest fire vanish. It ends it. And the heart is cleansed because miseries are not, they're not, we have people that or circumstances that we blame all our miseries on. But actually, our miseries are not caused by the external circumstances. They're caused by, one can either say that the three modes of material nature, rajagun or tamagun, or they are caused by, as the Avanti Brahmana says, as Jagvarat says, they are caused by the mind. Oh. Thank you, we listen, so I thank you. The problem with miseries is not that we're miserable. That's a peculiar thing to say, now that I think about it. But it's that it makes us long more for happiness on the material level. And then all the desires, so many desires, and the more miserable we become, or at least the more miserable, if we come to really, really depths of misery, then we just desire to end our misery. If the tamagun increases more, but the problem with suffering on a little bit of a higher level, it increases our rajagun, and I want this, and only if only I had that, then I wouldn't be unhappy. Only if this person wasn't doing this, and only if I had this and this and that and that and that. And then those material desires born of Rajagun get so fixed in the heart, and we fully identify with our material desires. And as long as we identify with our material desires, thinking that they are, it is me who is desiring it, and I want this, and I must have it, then our vision becomes blocked from seeing Krishna. He withdraws our ability to see Him. And He gives us, yayatammam prapadyante, He gives us what we want, which is not at all what we need, in fact, because what we need is not the increase of the fever of material desires, but rather what we need is to learn how to love Krishna, because that in and of itself is all. That is who we are. That is who we are. We are Krishna's. And Krishna is ours. That is the possession. That is the jewel that Krishna is withholding when we have material desires. Not. The jewel is what? Himself. Now what could be a more wonderful jewel than Krishna? Oh, I wasn't asking anyone to raise their hand and say a new sports car or something. So Asu. Their life
heirs,
tripta, gratified, yoginam, for practitioners of yoga, ubayato, in both worlds, api, even, asukam, unhappiness. Bhagavan, O Personality of Godhead. Anapagata, not gone away. Antakat, from death. Anadirudha, unobtained. Padat,
whose kingdom.
Bhavata,
from you.
Please listen carefully to the translation. Members of the renounced order who fail to uproot the last traces of material desires in their hearts remain impure. And thus, you do not allow them to understand you. Although you are present within their hearts, for them, you are like a jewel worn around the neck of a man who has totally forgotten he is there. What just happened?
The verses are so big, we can't read them in two words. So they've got the Sanskrit and the English.
Oh Lord, those who practice yoga only for sense gratification must suffer punishment both in this life and the next from death, who will not release them, and from you, whose kingdom they cannot reach. Such powerful points. Please repeat. Members of the renounced order.
Members of the renounced order.
Who fail to uproot the last traces of material desires in their hearts. Remain impure.
Remain impure.
And thus you do not allow them.
And thus you do not allow them.
To understand you.
To understand you.
Although you are present within their hearts,
although you are present within their hearts,
for them, you are like a jewel,
you are like a jewel,
worn around the neck
of a man,
who has totally forgotten it is there.
Oh Lord,
those who practice yoga, only for sense gratification.
Only for sense gratification.
Must suffer punishment
both in this life
and the next.
And the next.
So then, colon
means
these are the punishments. From death.
From death.
Who will not release them.
Who will not release them.
And from you.
And from you.
Whose kingdom they cannot reach.
Whose kingdom they cannot reach.
What do you think about that? What strikes you in that? What point is powerful for you in that?
It's not enough to merely practice bhakti yoga, you actually have to do a lot of motive.
Where in there?
In that those who practice yoga, it doesn't say bhakti yoga,
but that's the
point. Sanskrit application. So you're practicing, you practice bhakti because you like Shali, and that's the only way.
Well, let's make it a little nicer to say, if you're only thinking about your tongue, because Mahaprabhu, when you read in Chaitanya Charitamrita, in the last parts, what he talks about, the way he talks about prasada is something, he's not tasting it as something of this world. He calls it Adha Amrita, the nectar coming that is emanating from Krishna's lips. So one could like prasadam in the right consciousness, and only like prasadam in the right consciousness. But yes, very good point. One should practice with the proper motive. Thank you. Any other thing that is striking to anyone?
Yes. Very often we like to think of death as a form of liberation.
Yeah.
You know, we think death is going to be the release. But here it mentions that if you have any material desires, then you'll have to be born again, basically.
Yes.
And so you're getting sort of punished.
Yes.
As a result of the attachment.
Yeah.
And of course then you don't get Krishna.
Yeah. And then I thought that was very powerful too, the way it's described. Death will not release you in a continuous way, because it doesn't release you from a cycle of repeated deaths. So it's even worse. Caught in the grips of death again and again, because death for a materialist, adishtaya manastayam vishaya upasevate, determines their next body, their next birth, which means their next death. So the result, almost ironically, of not being released from death is birth, which causes death for one who has been born. Death is certain. This is samsara, and it is bhava mahadavagni. It is a forest fire, a conflagration that burns very heavily. Anyone else? Yes.
Just the last point that's made there. Most people can perceive death as being suffering, but then they say that they also get punished by the Lord because they can't go back to his kingdom for devotees.
This is the worst kind of suffering for an actual devotee, because he's longing to be with Krishna. This is what it means. Not to just be with Krishna, but because he's a devotee, to serve Krishna with great devotion. This is his longing, to serve Krishna with great devotion. When we read the Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita, we get glimpses of the true nature, the true hearts of the devotees, and they are only concerned with Krishna, especially the Vrajavasis. They are concerned with Krishna's pleasure. They want to be with him, to serve him, to please him. So they're longing for that. They're longing for that.
and Krishna will not allow them in. Why? Did you ever wonder that? Why couldn't you make the gate a little bit bigger? And there is that element too. There is that element too that it gets bigger, but really it's more that by mercy, and that's the element that makes the gate bigger, by mercy we get smaller so we can go through the little gate. Why doesn't Krishna just make it easy? Why doesn't he just let everyone in? Just open the doors and say, everyone can come. Yes.
We're not qualified.
What do you mean? Why? What's the not qualification?
We're envious of Krishna.
And yeah, we can't be there. It's not even that we wouldn't like it there, but we can't be there because everyone in Goloka Vrindavan loves Krishna. Their only thought is for him. He's so attractive that he's attracted everyone's mind so completely, like a a huge magnet attracts pieces of iron so completely you cannot pull it off. So Krishna has attracted everyone's mind in the Goloka Vrindavan that they only think of him and nothing else. And if we were there, first of all, we'd say, I have to go get my iPad. And what to speak of my mobile phone, you know, I'll be there in a few minutes. I have to get something first. But even if we were able to drop these things, if we were in Goloka Vrindavan and everyone was only thinking about Krishna, we'd say, well, aren't you forgetting someone very important? Excuse me, I'm also here. We just can't. But as soon as we actually love Krishna, as soon, just like that, we are there with it. Immediately. There's no separation. We don't even have to wait for a flower airplane to come and get us. Instantaneously. So the only lack, in the words of that Srila Prabhupada used to say, that his Guru Maharaj used to say, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he said, my Guru Maharaj, Prabhupada would say, said there is only one lack in this world, and it is a lack of Krishna consciousness. Krishna Bhakti Rasita Bhavatomati. That sweet taste awakened in the heart of our relationship with Krishna. And that sweet taste is so sweet, it cleans the heart fully, completely of everything else. Any traces of material desires, like a tidal wave, removes everything from the land. The tidal wave of love for Krishna, whatever else is there, just moves it, removes it, pushes it aside. That's it, is the most powerful thing. Prema Bhakti is the most powerful thing. It is so powerful that it even controls Krishna. Krishna Karshini, Moksha Laguna Kri, Krishna Karshini. Krishna Karshini and Sandrandananda Vishetshatma. It gives one, it allows one to experience an ecstasy that is incomparable, and it attracts Krishna. Now, since we really didn't, I'd like to end now, thank you very much. But since we didn't even read the purport, so maybe we can keep the same verse for tomorrow. Thank you very much. Any questions or comments? Yes.
When you're talking about Krishna revealing himself, If he did happen to reveal himself in front of you, should you pay your obeisances or run and get him some sweets?
If he happened to reveal himself in front of you,
you in this action and under form, well, pay your obeisances.
Well, just look over there, and then you'll see he actually has revealed himself. So you should first offer your obeisances and then go get him some sweets.
Because I heard the time when Lord Brahma was paying his obeisances, he was with his cowherd friends and singing.
He what?
When Lord Brahma was paying his obeisances after he stole the cows, Krishna was eating some sweets and thinking, I wish this person to hurry up and go away. Because he's not after all the reference.
But we're not up to spontaneous devotion. So we should pay our obeisances and then do our service to him. Actually, when Lord Brahma paid his obeisances to Krishna, because he has four heads, with one head he was paying obeisances, the other hand he was looking. Because Krishna was so attractive to him. Any other questions and comments?
In Shantaras, is there service or no service?
There's no service, there's just meditating.
That's why it's not.
That's one of the reasons why it's not, but this other reason is very interesting. It's just looking at him. In other words, there's no, the ecstatic mood that comes from pleasing Krishna doesn't exist within Shantaras, so there's no tendency to service. Shanti Ras. Any other questions or comments? Yes.
With these traces of the anattas in the heart, and the desires, do we have to keep, like, will the guru eventually remove them, or is it just up to us to do it?
Well, it's another question, another case of it's just not either or. Ultimately, if one has spiritual desires, and I'm speaking about it in a very simple, non-technical way, if one has spiritual desires and there's somewhat developed, and one also finds that he has material desires in one's heart. So that opens up a tension between the two. I want to serve Krishna, but look at my condition. So when you put those two together, the positive and the negative, so to speak, one becomes very humble. I want to serve Krishna, but look at my condition. It's all materialistic, my heart is so contaminated. And that tension caused by humility and the deep desire, on the other hand, or rather the desire to serve but feeling a lack of capacity to be able to serve, burns. That itself causes one to take very deep shelter of Krishna. So therefore, Mahaprabhu says, Trinada Bhishni Chena Taroda Bhishni Vishnara Manina Manadena Sitanya Siddhadi. The humility mixed with a very deep desire, a feeling of incapacity mixed with a very deep desire, causes the materialist, the anartas, or the materialistic desires to burn by Krishna's mercy. And by the mercy of the Vaishnavas of the Guru, they ignite these desires even more within our heart. But this, we usually think that we want to become qualified and that will help us get it. And that's really 100% true. But yet, the more we're aware of our disqualification and yet wanting something spiritual, this dynamic is really what what works. This is the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And even the great devotees, the greatest devotees, the six Goswamis, this is how they prosecuted their Krishna consciousness. In some moods they were feeling they were with Krishna, and then in other moods they were feeling completely distraught because Krishna was far away. Even Srimati Radharani, when Krishna went with her after the Rasa dance, I've just studied this because this is what I've been asked to teach in Vrindavan this year. And then Krishna went alone with her, and then Krishna left her, and she was feeling it was due to her pride. This is what she told the other gopis. It was due to my pride. I acted improperly, therefore Krishna left me. And usually, what we do, rather than taking shelter of deep longing and deep humility, we say, well, the reason why this is that it's this person in this circumstance. We never point those fingers at ourselves. And there's a difference, we never externally, or we alternate between blaming everyone else and feeling low self-esteem and despondent about our own self and going over everything continuously, self-indulgently in our mom's mind. But we're really asked to do something else. We're asked to develop a longing, develop humility, and take shelter of Krishna and beg for mercy. Feel the need and beg Krishna and Guru and Vaishnavas and Sisi Gornatai and Radha Vallabha and Ganapaladev Subhadra. The need has to be so strong that it removes the pride. And therefore, a few verses previously, the commentary quotes Srila Sridhar Swami saying, "My dear Lord, when will I give up all sense gratification and engage incessantly in meditating upon you? And when will I take up..." So the two can't go together. Desires for sense gratification and meditation on Krishna, in the same way that darkness and light cannot go together. But it continues, and when will I take up residence in the hermitages of saintly devotees, free from false pride? Then I will capture that. By association, I will capture the absence of their pride. That they're prideless because they're servants, and they never move from that position of sheltered servant. This is both the beginning of bhakti and the end of bhakti. Because when we take shelter, why do we take shelter of another? Because of how we feel a need. You know, if you're powerful, if you're in the mood of a kshatriya, you never take shelter of anyone. You can't. So why do we take shelter of Krishna when I feel I don't have the capacity myself? What keeps us from doing that? It's pride. So then he says, when will I take shelter of the saintly devotees who are free from pride? Because I will catch that. If they're so exalted, they're saintly, and they're free from pride, and here I am, knowing better than anyone else what goes on in my mind, and yet I'm proud and arrogant. So what a contradiction, and maybe I can bluff others, but I know myself better than anyone in the actual situation. And then, when I take shelter of that association, then I will become fully immersed in the inundation of great flood of nectar pouring from the devotee's lotus mouth as they chant sacred narrations about you. Very powerful, each of these lines, because they're emanating from the mouth of exalted persons. They can touch the heart. And pull us, the instructions can pull us right out of our material conditioning, right to his lotus feet. So that surrender due to humility and taking shelter, gives us a sense that we belong to Krishna. This is what Jiva Goswami describes. Like Sharanagati, gives us a sense of being sheltered, being and belonging to Krishna. And as long as we have pride brewing in our heart, thinking, well, I can do it, then we never get a real sense of having to take shelter of Krishna, never being part of his, written on his list of people that he has to take care of. And we don't feel that. And then we feel lonely. Because we don't. The Sanskrit word anatta. What does anatta mean?
Orphan.
Without a Lord, anatta, orphan. So that's the feeling of everyone in the material world, is a huge orphanage. Everyone is feeling separated from their anatta, their not. Their Lord. And all we have to do to end that is, and we're wondering why we're like this. And we're wondering why we feel so lonely. All we have to do is turn around. We'll see so many nice people. And that's what bhakti is. It's the process of turning to Krishna. From Bahyamukh to Samukh. It's turning towards Krishna. All the processes that we follow are basically just about to turn to Krishna. And it's the commitment of our Nath, our Lord, that keeps telling us to turn around. And he's so wonderful. I can't remember the Sanskrit verse from the Ramayana quoted in Tirumalaitamita. My Lord Ram from Vibhishan came to him. He said, "I have to accept him. I must accept him. It's my vow." Does anyone know the Sanskrit of that? I love it so much. I knew it and forgot it. I knew it and forgot it. Just like a man who has a jewel around his neck and still has mundane things in his heart, forgets that valuable jewel. So Lord Ram says that if one has called out to me sincerely, taking shelter of me, has called out one time, I will never forget that person. I will never rejected. Never. Kamba Dharam Sharanam Brajima. Who is a more powerful, who is a more wonderful person, suitable person to take shelter of? And of course, we may have tendencies within us that say, well, I've called out once, now I can do whatever I want. But and Krishna will say, if we have that kind of a tendency, he will say, very good boy, very good boy. Because he's very clever. Isn't that right, Mahatma Prabhu? He's very clever.
100%.
He's the most clever. Okay, now it's 7 o'clock, so I'll stop. Thank you very much. So tomorrow we shall continue with this verse. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Sri Sri Radha Balava, Sri Sri Gaunitai, Sri Sri Jagannath Baladeva, Subhadra Devi ki
jai.
Radha Balava Mahaprabhu Gaur Bhaktivinoda ki jai. Jai. Subhadra Gaur Bhaktivinoda ki jai.